With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Hello and welcome to episode 111 of We Are Going Up. I'm Mark Crossley. It's our first show of 2014. And to celebrate that fact, look who I've got with me. Sadly, not rocking the Beppe Sonino suit and Puma Kings look. David Cameron Walker is here.
Although I wish I was.
And sadly, not rocking the Martin Allen cardigan is Jim Knight.
I'm definitely glad I'm not rocking that.
Which is a real shame.
Or the spider monstrosity.
Happy New Year, boys. We've not done this for a while. I want to start with a bit of an accumulator chat. Because, Jim, you are the chief betting editor at Perform. So I want to know, what is the most amount of money you have ever won on one accumulator? And be honest.
I think it's in the region of like £400 or £500.
And is that before or after you became a professional?
Professional, not professional in any sense of the word in application.
People who know that.
Or occupation.
People know that, they listen. So £400, £500, DC?
I think it'd be about £120 at most.
Okay, well, you know I said on the show towards the end of last year...
Are you
year,
rich? Are you going to tell us thousands or something?
Not so, thousands, but you know I said I never won an accumulator and you were shocked by it.
I saw your tweet on New Year's Day.
New Year's
well,
Day,
it?
First day of the year.
Oh, I missed this.
First day of 2014, five teams to win. Arsenal against Cardiff.
Yep.
Burnley against Huddersfield.
Yep.
Brentford against MK Dons, was it?
No. Peterborough. You're outside the box here, aren't you?
No, it's Peterborough, wasn't it? Peterborough.
Yeah. I was on that.
Bury away at Hartlepool, 3-0.
Good.
Dagenham at home to AFC Wimbledon, 10 men. £150.
Well done, mate.
So I'm off and running.
I
thought I'd mention that because I saw your tweet the weekend about you being denied by Patrick Bamford, your lookalike.
My nemesis.
He hates you.
My alter ego.
So he scored the equaliser for him.
The more pictures I see of him, like the more like scared,
is he actually you?
Well, I mean, there are some photos that... The actual like photo, if you took like his team photo from MK from Chelsea or wherever, it probably doesn't look that much like similar. But like some of the photos where he's in action,
yeah,
literally could be
is
me.
He modelling
the
his
only
look on you.
The only difference being the quality of footballer that he is to you.
He's
okay,
going on loan to Derby as well, isn't he? So he could
he
be up in the Midlands if you're ever in Nottingham. Pop over to Derby.
We'll touch on that later. Before we get on with the show, a quick reminder to head over to audible.co.uk/goingup if you'd like a free 1 month trial and a free audiobook of your choosing. All thanks to Audible. You can cancel before the end of the first month if you wish, and it'd be great if as many of the people listening to this right now could take advantage of that offer, because as you can tell from the fact we plug it every week, basically if you do it, it helps us to continue to do the show as we do at the moment, plus you get a free audiobook. Jobs are good. So head to audible.co.uk/goingup. Right, on the show this week we'll talk a little bit about Ian Holloway's arrival at Millwall, plus Chris Hargreaves replacing Alan Neil at Torquay. We'll also talk about the FA Cup third round, where League One strugglers Stevenage surprised everyone, including the bookies, I would imagine, with a 3-2 win at the Keymo against Doncaster. Graham Wesley will now meet Roberto Martinez in a little bit of a clash of styles in the fourth round at the Lamex. We'll speak to Alan Scott later, who is the sports reporter, the Stevenage Advertiser, who will tell us a little bit more about a turbulent 12 months for the Borough, in which the club were statistically the worst performing team in England. But first, let's start in the northwest at Spotland. My favourite topic, Rochdale. One of the biggest FA Cup stories of the weekend took place there on Saturday when they knocked Leeds out of the FA Cup 2-0. Scott Hogan and an absolutely magnificent chip by Ian Henderson for the second goal. And I've seen some Leeds fans say on Twitter that their side were given a masterclass in attacking passing football by a League Two side. And Brian McDermott afterwards called it one of his lowest moments in the game. To tell us more about it and discuss a potential promotion push for Dale in the second half of the season, let's speak to a man who covers the week in and week out for the Rochdale Observer and the Manchester Evening News. It's Richard Partington, who I'm pleased to say is on the line right now. Rich, thank you very much for coming on the show. First of all, where does that rank amongst the great Rochdale performances you've seen in your time covering the club?
So
certainly put it top five. I think even Keith Hill suggested after the game that there was a memorable 2-0 win away at Southampton in the first year that they'd been promoted to League One, which stands out as a cracking performance. But certainly Saturday was right up there. As the Leeds fans alluded to, that some of the passing football was fantastic. 2-0 didn't really do justice to the performance. And I think anyone who's seen the brief highlights, Leeds had a couple of chances, don't get me wrong, a couple of headers cleared off the line, and Ross McCormack, who was very quiet on the day, had one shot just whistled past the post. But, you know, even then, when you look at the amount of chances Rochdale had, four or five goals would not have flattered them on the day. They were superb. It really did click into place. It was something of a little surprise, because the team selection was probably a bit of a shock to most supporters turning up on the day. Keith was forced to make one significant change in that. Michael Rose, who's the regular left back, was suspended. So Matty Doan filled in there, who's more known more as an attacking midfielder. And Joe Bunny, who's not featured at all regularly, he started up front. But it just all slotted into place. And the one thing you do know with the Keith Hill side is the players will all know the jobs, they'll all know what they're doing, they'll be very familiar with the system, very comfortable playing the role that they've been asked to play. And yeah, it looked a typical positive Keith Hill performance.
And the second goal in particular, fantastic volley from Ian Henderson. He's a player that we've talked to Rochdale fans on this show before about him, and they've waxed lyrical about what he can do when he's on form, and it was a fantastic goal.
Ian Henderson has looked like a player performing below his ability level all season for me. It's great credit to Keith Hill that he's managed to secure him on a contract at Spotland, because he's just looked a cut above all season. Even when the team hasn't played well, and even at times when he's not been on top form, he's still giving something that, dare I say, 9 out of 10 League Two players just don't have in the locker. He's got great ability, but he's also one of the hardest working footballers you're likely to see at that level. I mean, that goal was just sublime, wasn't it, on Saturday? He's been my player of the season, and I'm sure a lot of the supporters would back that up.
What did the commentator say, Jim? You were just saying about that goal?
On the ITV highlights that I saw, as the cross comes over and he's just about to kind of place it into the far corner, the commentator utters the words that time stands still because of the way the ball loops back over the goalkeeper and into the corner, and the defenders are just standing there kind of helpless, which I thought was quite apt at the time.
Measured finish, yeah. Wasn't it? And I was saying to the lads off air, Rich, that a couple of people I follow on Twitter who are big Dale fans were saying that Ian Henderson is the best player in League Two, and they're just very happy that they've got him.
Yeah, I mean, his missus came up north because he was at Colchester, obviously, before coming to Rochdale, and his missus moved up north to take a job at Manchester United. So he's come, or he's been looking to lay roots in the north, you know, because it suited the family to come up this way. But let's face it, there's no shortage of clubs in the northwest. You know, you look at a club like Oldham in League One, even Bolton in the Championship, dare I say, Ian Henderson would have certainly been worth a punt for clubs like that, because his performance levels are just outstanding. They really are.
So Keith Hill's come back in, second spell in charge at Rochdale, and we've spoken briefly about Ian Henderson and the type of players that he's been able to bring in and retain. And you spoke briefly earlier about the style of play as well. Is that the main change since Keith Hill came back in? The style of football that you're now playing is a lot more attractive, and obviously is getting good results as well.
Yeah, it's a lot more attractive. I mean, Keith Hill and Dave Flitcroft had been around for, what, 4.5 years. They'd taken Rochdale to the first Wembley appearance. They'd secured the first promotion in like 4 decades. And I think come the end of that 4.5 year, perhaps there was a little bit of familiarity creeping in, possibly on both sides, from the management and from supporters. And perhaps they were taking each other for granted in some ways. I think since Keith's come back, and in the time that he was away, let me say diplomatically, that the style was less than attractive. I think since he's come back and he's reintroduced the attractive style, I think on all sides, everyone's appreciating it so much more. It's just terrific to watch, and anyone who was taking it for granted, perhaps first time round, won't do now, because we've seen what happened when Keith Hill left. And he is a special manager, it has to be said.
People often say don't go back, and this has proved that perhaps sometimes it is a good idea to go back.
Yeah, I mean, he's not given over to making knee-jerk reactions. He's a clever man. He's very astute. I think he would have taken that into consideration. And I know he's told me that there was one or two of his friends who perhaps offered him that advice, you know, never go back. But I think he knew himself that if he came back to Rochdale, he would be given the time. I think that's what he cherishes. He wants the time to develop a team and to develop a club. Now, at Barnsley, he found a hell of a lot more politics to deal with than he did at Rochdale. Here, he's trusted and he's I wouldn't say given carte blanche, but he's given a lot of responsibility, and it's responsibility that he thrives on, really. And yeah, they certainly look on the road to success when you bear in mind that this squad, of course, has pretty much only been together for 6 months.
And the next round of the Cup, after beating Leeds, have been rewarded with a potential tie against either Sheffield Wednesday or Macclesfield following the replay. So, I mean, either of those teams will, you know, there'll be very different levels of opposition, but both games will have something to look forward to for the Rochdale fans.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's not a draw against Arsenal away, you know, so it's not exciting in that respect. But it's a tie that will give them a realistic opportunity of progressing to the next round of the competition. No one will take it for granted that they're through. Certainly Keith Hill and the team won't. But it is an opportunity. And what more can you ask it? So, yeah, I think there'll be a lot of excitement come January the 25th.
So given that whoever they face in the next round, you'd say it's potentially a winnable game.
Yeah.
So if this cup run goes on, obviously that'll be a good thing for the club financially. But with a League Two promotion race being as tight as it is, and you've already alluded to the fact that the squad isn't very big, you had to play players out of position against Leeds. Is that, you know, is that going to impact at all on the promotion race, do you think?
I think you can argue that either way, can't you? You can say that success breeds success, and I think if the cup run continues, everybody's on a high, spirits are high, and I would think that the confidence boost and the general feel good factor around the place would carry over into league form as well. So yeah, I see what you mean about the squad numbers. And talking to Keith over the Christmas period, he was suggesting that he didn't really feel the need to dip into the market. But perhaps given the fact that they've got this potential cup run, maybe we'll have a look at bringing a couple more bodies in just to help cope.
I wanted to ask about Scott Hogan briefly, because he scored the first goal, obviously, on Saturday, and he's got 12 this season, so he is going quite well, considering we're, you know, only just into the new year. Yeah. I was having a look at his kind of history earlier, and he has had quite a few clubs for a 21-year-old. He was at Dale under Keith Hill, wasn't he? He came through the youth system there, got released without making a first-team appearance, and then he's been to teams like Halifax, Stocksbridge, Ashton United and Hyde, and then back to Dale. Is that something that Keith Hill spoken about in terms of him needing to mature, like go out and then bringing him back to Dale? And obviously it's reaped rewards, because he's scoring plenty of goals for you at the moment.
Well, when he left Dale, he left, he'd served his apprenticeship. He didn't, he wasn't handed a professional contract, so he was gone. He's drifted around non-league because there's no question in his ability. But it was his application, really, that was perhaps missing. Keith Hill suggested himself that the last time Scott was at the club, he was looking for adventure with his friends as much as as committing to playing football. I think Scott has seen himself that if he really wants to be serious about making it, he can't solely rely on the natural talent he's got. He's got to apply himself. And he's come back and done that. And, you know, he looks a real player. He looks a player who, like Ian Henderson, can play at a higher level. I mean, there was talk of him moving to Birmingham in the summer because he'd knuckled down and decided, yeah, I want to give this a serious go. And I think the fact that he went back to Rochdale was down largely to the fact Keith Hill was back at Rochdale and he wanted to work with him. because he has an excellent track record in developing these young players.
We've talked obviously about the cup and that great result on Saturday. Let's have a look at the league then, because as DC mentioned, it is ridiculously tight at the top. You've got Scunthorpe on 44, then Burton 42, Chesterfield 41, Southend 41, Rochdale 40, Oxford and Fleetwood both on 38. They were top of the league a few weeks ago. Yeah. Do you think this is going to go right down to the wire, and do you think this squad is good enough to get automatically promoted from this division?
I think they are good enough. And I'm loath to say that because I know Keith wants to keep them under the radar for as long as possible. He doesn't want heightened expectancy, and he's quite right to try and avoid that because they have only been together for 6 months. Really, this is a squad that is learning the ropes together. And, you know, to be where they are now is, you know, they've exceeded expectations. So to talk about them as an automatic promotion candidate seems to be jumping the gun a bit. But having said that, having watched them, they have got it.
One significant difference from the last time Keith Hill was in charge at Spotland is this time there's no David Flitcroft alongside him. He is, of all places, now manager of Bury.
Yes.
So, I mean, how do you think that Keith Hill's changed at all by not having Flitcroft alongside him at all? Has that had any impact?
I think he's changed in that he learned a few lessons while he was away from Rochdale. You know, experience has taught him one or two things. Flicker was worked superbly for him in terms of bouncing off each other. But I think Keith likes to reinvent himself and reinvent teams and philosophies. And he doesn't like players to be in a comfort zone. And I don't think he likes himself to be in a comfort zone. So I think the fact that Flicker was taken away from him, or he was taken away from Flicker, as the case was at Barnsley, kind of forced him out of that comfort zone. And I think he's enjoyed that challenge, to be honest. I mean, him and Dave Flitcroft are still great mates.
He was there, wasn't he, on Saturday?
On Saturday, yeah. And had a drink with Keith in his office after the game, and was pleased as punch for his mate. You know, that's how close they are. But no, I think Keith has risen to the challenge, really, of being without Dave Flitcroft. Maybe, I mean, I don't think he'd ever admit that, but perhaps he's seen it as a chance to prove that it wasn't Dave who was pulling the strings, as some people had alluded to. You know, he's a great manager in his own right. And in fairness, Chris Beach, who's number two now at Rochdale, he's done a terrific job as well. He's very much an unsung hero, but he deserves credit too.
And do you know what's happening on Saturday the 8th of March, Rich?
Saturday the 8th of March. Oh, that'll be the derby clash.
It's the derby clash. It's going to be Hill against Flitcroft.
Hill against Flitcroft. That's a strange one, isn't it? Given the fact that the supporters, there's no love lost really between Rochdale and Bury supporters, and yet, you know, the two managers there, they could sit on the same bench really, and I don't think there'd be a crossword between them.
And do you think by the time you come around to that game, and even sooner indeed, that Rochdale will have any new players, given the transfer window is open now and that the loan window will continue to be open after the transfer window shuts? Would the cup run perhaps give Keith Hill a little bit of a budget to strengthen in certain areas?
Yeah, well, I mean, Rochdale's budget is nowhere near one of the highest in the division, and yet I know for a fact that Keith is coming in under budget in terms of wages at the club. So I think there is a little bit of flexibility there. There is money to be utilised, not a lot, because, you know, that's the nature of the club.
Where do you think the priority would be positionally? Who, you know, what would he look to bring in first?
I think he's okay central midfield if he keeps hold of Gary Dicker, who's here until end of January. If he decides to stay on midfield wise, I think they're okay. I think he may look up front because Graham Cummins has filled in for George Donnelly, who's been out injured for a while. And it did leave Rochdale a little bit light up front when Donnelly was injured. So, yeah, I'm saying that. Joe Bunny came in and did a great job on Saturday. But I think maybe an experienced head up front might tempt him. And possibly someone at left back as cover for Michael Rose. Because as well as Matt Doan played on Saturday, I think he'll want to use him further up the field. So, yeah, left back and a front man, I would suggest.
Nice to talk to you, Richard. Thanks very much for coming on.
Thanks very much.
Bring on the derby. Come on, Barry.
Bring it on.
That is Richard Partington, who's the Rochdale reporter for both the Rochdale Observer and the Manchester Evening News. And next, we're going to turn our attention to the side bottom of League One, who also produced a big cup upset this weekend. Doncaster 2, Stevenage 3 then. Undoubtedly one of the results of the third round achieved by a side who were bottom of League One with only one league win from their last nine games. And in fact, according to some research, which you might have seen this week by Sporting Intelligence, of all the teams playing in the main four divisions of English football in 2013, so that's 94 clubs in total, Stevenage were the worst. The worst record, just 0.78 points per game, 46 games played, 10 wins, 6 draws and 30 defeats last year. So can this win and that fourth round tie with Everton be the catalyst for Graeme Wesley to correct that league form? Let's find out. Let's speak to Alan Scott, who is a sports reporter at the Stevenage Advertiser and the Hertfordshire Mercury, and he follows Stevenage every week. Alan, first of all, thank you very much for coming on the show. How impressed were you by that performance and the result on Saturday?
Yes, it was a very good performance, yeah. It was very close at half-time. There wasn't a lot in it in the first half, but second half they came out and they really gave it everything and scored some very good goals. You know, they've got some players there that can be quite clinical in front of goals. So hopefully it's going to be onwards and upwards now, really.
Do you think that will be the case? Like, because they have been struggling dreadfully, not just this season but this whole year, as Mark just said at the start there. And you know, can this give them confidence to kick on? Because there's certainly this form in the league hasn't been anywhere to be seen.
Yeah, well, basically, Graeme Wesley came back in about February, March time, and he brought in quite a few new players in the summer. So it's a lot of changes in the team. And then it's an indifferent start to the season, quite poor, but a lot of new players, as I say, gelling together. And then they went on a bit of a run, and it's been like a bit up and down, really. But and they've had some good results, you know. I mean, they won away at Peterborough, so not many teams are going to do that. They've beaten Leighton Orient this season, and they, even at home they only lost narrowly. But it's been the last sort of 6 weeks they've had a bad run in the league. But yeah, hopefully, and they've had injuries, big injuries there to key players during that time, and suspensions which haven't helped. But hopefully, yeah, now they've got a player called Darius Charles come back from injury now, so hopefully he's going to have a good run and be if they can keep hold of Francois Zocco, who's out of contract at the end of this month, then. They should do a lot better than what they've previously done, yeah.
And another player that they'll be looking to keep hold of is Luke Freeman, who, whenever I've watched Stevenage in the past, he's always been, for me, your best player. And the club have admitted that they are prepared to listen to offers for him.
Yeah, I think because there's been so many new players come in, there's been an imbalance in the books. So, and I think the manager had hoped to get rid of a few players, but it hasn't happened. So he's put a few players out on loan, Marcus Haber and Danny Lopez, players like that. But they haven't been able to get any funds from them. But so I suppose it was looking ominous, really, that perhaps someone, you know, they'd have to sell a big player, one of their jewels, and you know, just to balance the books, really. But if they can hang on to him and maybe offload some of the other players, then that's what he'd like to do, I think. But I suppose he's just, you know, he's, at the end of the day, the chairman said, I've really got to balance the books here. You know, we're not getting as many fans in as we need to. So they're getting about 3,000, but he was hoping to get towards 4,000 this season. But because they're struggling in the league, obviously, they've not been able to build on that and get more people through the gates, really.
You mentioned Francois Zocco a minute ago. If Stevenage are to stay up, how important is he going to be? He's got 10 goals already this season. I think it was the start of this season, or was it the start of last season? I tipped him to be League 2 top scorer and I was given a load of stick for it. But he has been scoring goals this season.
Yeah, he's a fantastic player. I think, you know, if they can keep hold of him till the end of the season, that would be absolutely brilliant. And perhaps that's what they're thinking in terms of maybe selling Freeman, because they want to give Zocco a deal that will keep him there until May, because he's got so much power, he's so much presence up front, and you feel that when he's got that chance, he will stick it in, you know. So he's a brilliant finisher, and I am surprised, really, that he hasn't been picked up by some of the bigger clubs in League One. But it's good news for Stevenage. They can hang on to him.
So you've drawn Everton in the next round. It's obviously a big tie, and going to be one of the most publicised ties out of the fourth round as well. Do you think Stevenage have got a hope of winning the game? I was looking at your results from the season earlier, and you know there are notable wins. You beat Brentford already this season. You've beaten Peterborough as well. So is it a case of managing to get these players up for the big games, and hopefully they deliver a performance against Everton that's kind of worthy of that?
Well, I was up at Everton earlier in the season. Stevenage played them in the Capital One Cup, and that went to extra time. And at the time, Stevenage weren't playing particularly well. You know, a lot, as I said, a lot of new players come in. But they really held their own against Everton, really played well, and it was only very late on in extra time that Everton got the winner. Now, Roberto Martinez is going for the Champions League spots this season. You know, the FA Cup, will he name his strongest side? Possibly not. You know, you never know. If Stevenage are at home, it's the Cup. They're not going to... I think the players are not going to like coming down to the Lamex Stadium and ground.
Didn't you beat Newcastle a few years ago as well?
Yeah, Newcastle, yeah, and they've beaten Reading. So they've had some really good cup upsets, really. So it's you know, you just don't know, do you, in the Cup. You know, it's a one-off game. They lost 2-1 after extra time to Everton, and Everton had a strong side that day as well. So fingers crossed, you know, they can pull off an upset.
I want to talk a little bit now about the manager, Graham Wesley. He does have something of a reputation, but at Stevenage, you know, that reputation is very good because they enjoyed great success under him the first time before he left to chance his hand at a bigger club with Preston. But he's come back for another spell in charge, and it isn't going as well as it was when he left the club before, when they were in the playoffs. I mean, has anything changed since Wesley's come back? What's kind of the atmosphere and the mood with Wesley now in in this spell?
I think he's very well respected by the players. You know, they there's a bond there, and I think that he's going to, you know, he's sort of built in a completely new team. I think I'll be, you know, he gets on so well with the chairman. I'll be amazed if, you know, I know they're down there, and you know, people might tip him to be sacked if they went on a losing run. But I just couldn't see it happening because he's, you know, at the end of the day, Stevenage are punching above their weight, really. They're doing fantastically well, and if they can hang on to some of these players, put a little run together like they did earlier in the season, then hopefully they can avoid the relegation spots.
Do you think Wesley's reputation is fair? Because he does have a lot of critics out there. I mean, we've had a go at him as much as anyone else has on this show, in fairness, and he has come out fighting a lot of the time, and you know, he said he thinks that he gets harsh treatment from referees and that his team get too much stick and didn't get enough credit when they were doing well before. But to give Graham Wesley some credit, he's certainly an original sort of character, and he's not afraid to say what he thinks, and he's got some very interesting ideas about the game.
Definitely, yeah. I know, I've found it very interesting to deal with. You know, we sort of, he comes out with some great stuff for me, so it's just a case of he doesn't suffer fools gladly, you know. So you have to really think. I think I'll go in there and I need to know what I'm talking about and be prepared with my questions, because he'll want to catch me out. But you know, it's all a bit of chess, really. So
you're never short of a bit of copy with him around, are you? There's quotes flying around all over the place. Let's take a look then at the situation. Stevenage have played 23 games in League One. That's obviously half the season. 19 points isn't a great return.
No.
5 points off safety already. Do you think that they can stay up?
It's going to be tough, but I think it's a case of keeping hold of their key players. And I think this bad run they'd gone on recently coincided with Peter Hartley, a very experienced defender who signed in the summer. He'd missed the last four games. He came back Saturday, he scored, and obviously the defence looked a lot tighter. So I think it's just a case of, it's not just the Zocos, it's the people like the Hartleys of this world, and keeping key players fit. And then hopefully, you know, we'll have to see, but hopefully they can put a run together like they did earlier in the season, then they can go on from there.
Well, it's quite an important month, just looking at the fixtures, because you've got Oldham away on Saturday, obviously team down there, not far from you. Then you play Swindon, then after that, Notts County are obviously down there, then you've got the Everton game, and then you've got Crewe, who are right down there. So you've got three games there against sides in and around Stevenage.
That's it, yeah. But it's funny, really, because with Graham Wesley, he'll say that he won't call them six-pointers. He'll want to go into the games against, he'll want to win the games against Orient and Swindon and the Rotherhams, you know, when they play them. So he doesn't see it like that. He just wants to win every single game. So, you know, he won't get bogged down in terms of, oh, this game against Crewe, we've got to win this one. You know, he's just not that sort of person, really. But they've certainly got a battle ahead, yeah.
Well, good luck for the rest of the season. Thanks very much for coming on. Nice to speak to you. Cheers. That's Alan Scott, who is a sports reporter at the Stevenage Advertiser and the Hertfordshire Mercury. Right now, it's time for that part of the show where we do My Club to celebrate the 125th anniversary of the Football League. We give Football League fans 125 seconds to tell us all about their club. And today, the focus is on one of Stevenage's opponents soon, this weekend, in fact, Oldham Athletic.
This is We Are Going Up. My Club in 125 seconds.
Hello, I'm Joshua Bowker, and my club is Oldham Athletic.
So, Joshua, can you remember your first ever trip to Boundary Park?
Yeah, 2002, we beat Mansfield 6-1, and it's been downhill ever since, really.
From that high, then, what's the worst moment you've had as an Oldham fan?
Last couple of years, we got to the semis and Northern final of the JPT, and losing to Chesterfield. I mean, we've not really done anything in the league for years, so a trip to Wembley would be nice, but...
I was going to say, because Oldham have been in the same division for a hell of a long time, so you've not really had too many ups and downs since 2002, really.
No, we've had a couple of playoffs, a couple of skirts of relegation, but mainly mid-table.
You gave it a really good shot last year in the FA Cup, didn't quite manage to do the same this year, but you did get to go to Anfield. Were you there yesterday?
Yeah, it was a good day out. Unlucky, I mean, they played all the big boys, so it'd be a tough one to win. Not as good as last year, but still.
And what about your favourite Oldham Athletic goal ever, Josh?
On Survival Sunday, when we got taken over by our current chairman, we were on the brink of going out of business. Our left back, Adam Griffin, scored an over a scissor kick, and it was glorious.
Fantastic.
Who was that against?
Grimsby.
You've got the youngest manager in the Football League by quite some time, but who is your favourite Oldham manager of all time?
Tough one. I don't think I've had a good one in a while. Lee's doing a good job, I suppose. He's playing good football, which we've not seen for a few years. It's been a bit, especially with Smith last year up front, it was a lot of lump in it to him, but he's keeping it on the deck and trying to play it this year, so you've got to appreciate that.
It's got to be big Joe Royal, surely.
I wasn't around for him. I've missed all the glory years.
You missed the Premier League years?
I missed all of that. I've seen League One and only League One.
Oh dear.
And your hopes for the rest of this season?
Don't get relegated, mainly. Stockport are our neighbours, and we've seen what happens if you go down. It's a tough one to get back up, so going down to start the question.
Okay, Josh, your 2 minutes is up. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
My club in 125 seconds. We are going up. We've got the Football League covered.
Right, we'll have another My Club on the show next week. But right now, it's time to talk a little bit more about what took place in the Football League and in the FA Cup third round over the last few days. Let's start at Roots Hall on Saturday. It was the game that had everything. Goals, a red card, the weather was dreadful, the floodlights were going out. And at the end of it all, Southend 4, Millwall 1. Phil Brown is going to get his match against Hull in the next round of the FA Cup in round 4. But Millwall have got a new manager, Ian Holloway. Has been appointed.
I'm quite surprised about that, actually. I didn't think that he would go for them. And if I was a Millwall fan, I suppose I'd be quite
excited.
Pleased with it. Yeah, you certainly would think that they've got a much better chance of staying up now than they had under Steve Lomas. However, I don't think it's all immediately, you know, guaranteed to go swimmingly for Holloway. For all of his promotions, he got Palace up and he took Blackpool into the Premier League once and nearly twice. You know, he's also taken a team down, as Jim will know well, with Leicester, taking the team out of the Championship. And he took over Palace when they were top of the league and flying and, you know, just got into the playoffs in the end. And fair enough, they won the playoffs. But I think it was basically down to them having the outstanding player in the division last year, and that was Wilfried Zaha, rather than any sort of fantastic tactical genius or anything that Holloway did. So I'd be interested to see how it goes.
Yeah, they're a tough set of fans to please, aren't they? And I think there were some quotes going around today from his last trip to Millwall, and he said he'd barely stepped foot out the car and he was already being booed and hurled abuse at by the Millwall faithful. So it's going to be interesting to see how they react to that. Yeah, I'd go along with what DC says. I think that the calibre of manager they were probably expecting to get in, maybe Ian Holloway's a little bit above that standard, but maybe he does feel like he's got a point to prove.
If he does get booed and fans turn on his first day, it won't be the first time it's happened this season there, will it? So
I don't think they will, though, to be honest with you. I mean, I know Crystal Palace are big rivals of Millwall, just as West Ham are, but I think he's not quite, you know, as synonymous with Palace as Lomas was with West Ham. He's been around, his character as well. I think I would expect he's the sort of man that will, you know, self-deprecatingly acknowledge his past with Palace in his first press conference. He'll probably make a joke out of it and he'll try and get the fans on side. He is somebody, you know, who will look to give the whole place a lift, won't they? Because that's what they need at the moment. They're right down and out, and they need somebody to come in and breathe a bit of life into it.
Quick word of sort of praise for Phil Brown as well. Doing a great job there.
Yeah.
Your tip to be relegated.
Yeah, you keep reminding me. But, you know, fair.
One defeat in 10 league games now, and 4-1 victory against a team and two divisions above them.
That's a hell of an achievement, because, you know, they do have a very small squad down there, very small budget down at Roots Hall, and a fantastic victory in the FA Cup. And, you know, what a great tie against Hull.
Another one from the weekend to talk about was Aston Villa 1, Sheffield United 2. Let's not bother talking about Paul Lambert and all that kind of thing that's been done to death by everyone else. From a Sheffield United perspective, though, Nigel Clough gone in there, obviously been sacked by Derby. He took his time at first to get a few results, but they're starting to pick up the odd win now. Yeah. And to go to Villa Park, and Villa, for all that talk, only made about three or four changes.
Absolutely.
So.
It's more of an achievement for Sheffield United than many people think, really, because all the talk before the game was how Villa were going to give up. He was going to play the load of kids. He could do without the FA Cup and all that, but he played a very, very strong side. You know, Benteke was up front, one of the most sought-after strikers in Europe at one point this summer, and he had a hatful of chances and couldn't take them. George Long made a number of good saves. And it's a fantastic victory. It was a great goal from Ryan Flynn, who was the man of the match. Yeah.
Fantastic. Elsewhere, speaking of teams from the Football League toppling Premier League opposition, Jim, I'll come to you as the lesser fan on this. Nottingham Forest 5, West Ham United 0, and a hat-trick by 22-year-old Jamie Patterson.
Who'd never scored a goal for Forest before either. So
in contrast,
to get three against West Ham is
in contrast
great.
To Villa, though, West Ham did make quite a few changes for this game.
Yeah, they did. They put they made quite a few changes, didn't they? And they put a lot of the untested, untried under-21 team. I mean, the commentator on ITV that I was watching the coverage for did highlight the fact that they were top of the under-21 league or their respective division, so maybe kind of high hopes for those players. I think it was Moncur's son was in there, wasn't he?
George Moncur.
And they just weren't up to it. And I think the most telling thing about the squad as a whole was the fact that on his bench he didn't have any kind of experience to call on, so when he wanted to shake things up second half, it was just throwing more kind of under-21s into the game, and it just seemed to exacerbate the problem from a Forest perspective. Great performance. I mean, they've been going great guns in the league for a little while now, and that they've always had that performance in them, considering they haven't got a kind of starting with a recognised striker as well at the moment. Greg Halford's doing a job up top when he's normally a left back.
Correct me if I'm wrong on this, but wasn't the whole point of him playing Halford up front to sort of say to the board, come on, I need money for a striker,
and now Halford's
having a blinder, and they're like, well, hang on a minute, you don't need the money.
No, exactly, and he's doing really well. He's just so dominant in the air, and he had a couple of good chances as well against West Ham, and I think he'd be disappointed not to score with one of them.
Yeah, but I did wonder, watching the game, at that exact point, you know, he's been up to his old tricks again, saying we need more players in, we need a striker, and I absolutely agree with him. I said that right back at the start of the season when I saw them play against Watford. They need a real decent striker just to complete the picture there. But then Halford's come in and has been playing up front recently. He can play anywhere, but he's been doing okay up front. And Patterson, who hasn't scored this season, scores a hat-trick on TV and everyone's wowing about him. So are the money men there, as Faraz Al-Azhar is going to look at that and think, well, you've got two guys there that are not doing too bad. But regardless of that, I do think they need a striker, and it will only complement them, because they're playing really well. The midfield's excellent, and they're playing with, you know, great confidence at the moment. And, you know, West Ham did play a lot of kids, and I think actually Sam Allardyce was unfair on a lot of those kids, sort of dumping them in and then kind of digging him out a little bit after the game. But they did have some experienced players there. You know, Stuart Downing, Matt Jarvis was playing.
Robert Morrison.
Yeah, Morrison's got experience
Diarra
in the Premier League.
Well.
Yeah, Diarra, exactly. You know, Maiga was up front. So I think it wasn't a completely changed squad.
I mean,
it's not right
for
Forest's achievement in winning that game. They didn't just beat West Ham, they absolutely battered them, and they were superb.
Blackburn 1, Manchester City 1. Great performance by Blackburn to take that to a replay. Coventry 1-2-1 at Barnsley. Leon Clark with a late goal. They've got Arsenal away in round 4. Ka-ching.
Yep.
Macclesfield have taken Sheffield Wednesday to a replay, although they looked like they were going to win that game and took off their two strikers to get a replay, which just kind of says what it all, you know, what it's like down there in non-league in terms of the finances. Grimsby 2-1 up against Huddersfield with 2 minutes to go, and somehow managed to lose 3-2. And we've got to talk about
an own goal as well.
It was, yeah. We've got to talk about Kidderminster as well. 0-0 draw against Peterborough. They've got a replay, but that game did feature, I mean, overtaking the Morecambe Cheltenham goalmouth scramble.
Fantastic.
The best goalmouth scramble of the season.
Hit the bar three times, didn't it?
And in about 10 seconds.
There was some question about whether it actually did go over the line.
Sopalonga's header, when they were questioning.
They've definitely not got Hawkeye at Agborough, I can tell you that. Elsewhere then, let's talk about your trip to Stoke. That's next on the running order, Jim. Tell us about it. Stoke 2, Leicester 1.
Yeah, it was quiet, we made a lot of changes.
Was it typically windy?
That's exactly what I said to him earlier.
Where's this thing come from with Stoke?
Is it, well, everyone I know that's ever been to the Britannia, even on a summer's day, they say it's cold
kind of elevated, but it's not kind of... I didn't feel myself being blown around like outside the ground. Maybe I just went on an uncharacteristically low, windy day. But no, I mean, we did exactly what we've been doing in the Capital One Cup up until this point, and making five or six changes. So we rested the likes of David Nugent, Lloyd Dyer. Kasper Schmeichel did start in goal, but then our centre-back partnership was completely changed from what it would normally be. I think we gave a relatively good account of ourselves second half, and I'm disappointed a little bit that we didn't start with a stronger team, but we have got Derby on Friday night as well, so we kind of did have to make a few changes with that in mind. We took 4,500 fans, so it was a lively atmosphere in the away end. It was a good day out. I enjoyed it. I've not been to Stoke for a long, long time to watch a game.
Well, maybe you'll be going back there next.
Yeah, maybe so.
The way things
maybe
are going. So. Burnley, 4-3, cracker that was. Away at Southampton, they went down there. Oldham, as we mentioned to Josh earlier on, my club out at Anfield. Derby, we touched on that at the top of the show. We touched on Patrick Bamford going to Derby at the top of the show.
Yeah, that's a great signing.
Lost 2-0 at home to Chelsea, but they didn't disgrace themselves by any means.
No. They've got Michael Keane there as well at Derby, centre-back, who was with us last year, and he's a fantastic signing. Steve McLaren's done a great job in getting in a lot of kind of inexperienced but still high quality loan players, and I think it's working that market really well.
It will be interesting to see whether Bamford can continue. You know, this is a step up now. He scored goals for fun in League One, but you know, the standard will go up in the Championship, and obviously, you know, a very, very highly rated young man. On, you know, Chelsea bought him from Nottingham Forest for a fair bit of money when he was a young teenager, so we'll see whether he's got what it takes.
Speaking of the Championship, a couple more stories to mention on the show this week. We might actually go into these in more depth perhaps in a future week, but Charlton have been taken over. Who's going to pronounce this guy's name? Roland Duchatelet.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Okay, he's taken over.
I'll endeavour to find the correct pronunciation.
Belgian businessman, Belgian, I think, involved in Standard Liège.
I think they've already signed a player from Standard Liège.
Yeah, I think you said 100%, didn't you? That you bought?
Yeah, they bought 100% of the shares, so there's no kind of other ownership going on. They've literally completely bought the holding company that he owns has bought 100%.
Well, that's got to be good news,
Chris
think.
Powell, you would think so.
Has been quoted as saying he's unsure about his future in terms of what will happen when the takeover comes, before it happens. So now it's come, and we'll see whether he gets back. So I think it would be ridiculous to get rid of Chris Powell, but we have to wait and see.
And talk to me about Bolton then, Jim. This is Bolton. Ludicrous. They've announced this week they're £163.8 million in debt after their parent company, Burnden Leisure PLC, released its figures for the year ending June 2013.
It's a staggering...
Was it debt 50 million loss this year?
I think it was 54 million pound loss, wasn't it? This year. It's just a staggeringly large amount of money for a team that, yes, I know they suffered relegation, and yet they brought a big wage bill down. I think that was one of the main reasons why we fancied them to go back up, because they had retained a lot of the better, in inverted commas, better players who obviously come with big contracts, and maybe they weren't expecting relegation, whereas a lot of teams who go up and were expecting a fight or already up there sign players with like a wage clause which says they're reduced by 25% or 30% should they get relegated, unless they move on.
Well, they're in the Premier League for such a long time.
Yes,
that's the thing. They're stabilising there,
they're in Europe. You remember?
Exactly. Yes. You know, they cup finals, and they probably wanted to take that step up and try and cement themselves, but they had that terrible season under Owen Call and went down. But of the 160 million odd debt they've got, 151.3 million of it is owed to the owner, Eddie Davies. So that's obviously the large bulk of it, and that is
can he afford it?
Well, yeah.
Hey, did you mind writing that off?
Just write it off. That's what Leicester owners have done, actually.
Forget about it. But, you know, he said that he's not going to go anywhere. He's not necessarily going to be able to put much more money in because of the financial fair play regulations that are coming in. Now there's penalties that will be given to clubs if they have a certain, you know, if they don't have their houses in order, and Bolton are very much in danger of violating those rules.
Well, just on that, just before you go any further, I saw a stat the other day, courtesy of Ian Pryor on Twitter. Their debt to income ratio is 572%.
Yeah, I mean, it's completely and utterly unsustainable. They need to do something. They've said they've got a plan, you know, a 5-year plan to ensure finances return to to a more stable condition, and it's not dependent on rejoining the Premier League. But you know, there's obviously big pressure on them there. You know, they. Getting up to the Premier League was obviously going to help them. So they're either going to need to get promoted
They're either going to need to find new investment, or they're going to need to, you know, completely and utterly asset strip the whole thing, you know, strip the wage bill right down to its bare minimum and start again. And none of those things are easy things to do.
Well, at least results are picking up a little bit on the pitch at the moment. They got through, didn't they, the weekend. They play Cardiff at home in the next round. OK, let's go on to League One and League Two. There was a few games over the weekend. I think just the one in League One, which was Gillingham 1, Wolves 0 on Friday night, which you might have watched on Sky. Cody McDonald, he won me another bet there. I didn't earn first goal. Only won about £2 or something.
Drinks are on you, mate.
Yeah, last minute winner. And Wolves are on a little bit of a wobble at the moment, which is will be quite worrying. There's a story about Wayne Hennessy refusing to play in goal for them.
Yeah, because he's potentially going to Crystal Palace, is that right? Amid some interest, and he apparently declared himself not mentally right to play on the eve of the game.
Well, they've only got one win in their last seven games in all competitions.
They and Peterborough as well, like two really kind of big price, short price favourites to go up.
At the start of the season, we were banging on about Orient Wolves and Peterborough, and there's teams like Brentford which are sort of pulling clear now, really.
Yeah, definitely.
I wouldn't be too concerned if I was a Wolves fan. I did see some people retweeting Wolves fans who were really complaining about Jacket, saying he was too defensive and stuff, but I really, really wouldn't look a gift horse in their mouth. You know, you've got a good thing on your hands there. He'll do a good job. He's doing a good job. You've had a few draws lately, which have been disappointing, but it's not like they're losing loads of games. I know they're interested in signing Naki Wells, along with a number of other clubs, but I believe they're interested in signing him. So if they were to pull off a signing like that, that'd be fantastic.
That'd be a real
boost for them.
Huge.
So I'm sure, you know, they will have some ability to strengthen the squad in January. And, you know, they're right. They're only 3 points behind Brentford. No need to panic.
Do you know what else that game was notable for? It was Adebayo Akinfenwa up against George Ellacobe.
Yeah, I saw the pictures of that. Fantastic.
Outstanding.
The immovable object against the unstoppable force. I don't know which one's which.
Something like that, yeah.
Okay, immovable objects against each other.
Let's finish by talking about another managerial change. Kind of inevitable, but Alan Neil was sacked as Torquay manager in the last 7 days. And they've announced that their former captain, Chris Hargreaves, is going to take over. He's 41 years old. It's his first managerial job, having left his role at Bournemouth, where he was first team coach. Now, if you're a new listener, you might not have heard this. If you're a regular listener, you probably will have heard this, but it was a while ago. It was about 7 or 8 weeks ago. We spoke to Jim Proudfoot, a matchday commentator for Absolute Radio. And of course, he's a big Torquay fan. And when we had him on, we asked him about the prospect of Chris Hargreaves taking over from Alan Neil. And this is what he said.
If you're looking at it from a realistic perspective of the owners, they've got an experienced manager. It's not working, but he's had a managerial career probably where his fourth league club, I would think. Now, Chris Hargreaves has been coaching the junior teams at Bournemouth. If they sacked Alan Neil and brought Chris Hargreaves in, and again, he's someone else that I think is fantastic, but he's got no managerial experience. So if you brought him in now and it all went wrong, or it didn't instantly all go right, that is a massive decision and it looks like a horrendous mistake. That it would just be a massive gamble bringing Greavesy back to the club now.
I think any managerial appointment is a gamble. I completely understand where Jim's coming from. You don't want a man who's had such a great reputation and great history with the club to kind of taint his legacy. High profile example would be someone like Alan Shearer at Newcastle.
Yeah, well, the stakes are so high as well with league status on the line.
But, you know, they've been down in the doldrums. It hasn't worked for them under Alan Neil. Perhaps they've given him a bit more time than many people thought they would, and he still hasn't been able to get those results. So Hargreaves, you'd think in the short term initially, will give the fans a lift. You know, it'll be optimism, will return to the place. We're going to find out whether or not he's got what it takes as a manager to get them out of trouble. And it is about as difficult a job as you can hope to have for your first job in management. But he does know the place and he'll be up for it. And, you know, he will have that magic word that fans always look to in times of trouble. And he will have passion and he will be bang up for it. And let's hope that he's got not just the passion, but the actual real ability as a coach, which I'm sure he does after working with Eddie Howe at Bournemouth to come in and make a real difference.
Down at the bottom of League 2 then, I'm just looking at the table after New Year's Day. There was another win for Mansfield. I think it's 2 wins in 3. Successive wins for York. AFC Wimbledon won away at Wickham. You've also got Torquay, you've got a point. Northampton won, so it's all really tightening up. Portsmouth are only 3 points clear of relegation. Surely not. Surely not a third or fourth successive relegation?
Yeah, that'd be pretty gutting, wouldn't it? Especially after all the turbulent times they've been through in the summer with the kind of going towards the fan ownership route. But at the end of the day, as you said, you know, it is getting pretty tight down there. And you've got to start to be worried, I think, if you're...
It would just take the complete and utter wind out of the place, wouldn't it? I mean, after you thought they bottomed out and they'd reached their lowest ebb and, you know, they were going to start a resurgence with the supporters' trust finally taking control of the club. The club was back in the hands of the people that care, and that's the fans. And it would be such a kick in the teeth for them if they were to go down after working so hard to get themselves into that position.
Okay, well, I think that's it. I think that completes episode 111 of this show. Thank you very much for listening. If you want to have a go and have a little nosy at the website, the blogs are there, wearegoingup.co.uk. You can go to iTunes as well, and please rate and review and subscribe and everything else you can do on there. Search for us on iTunes or follow the link from the website. Take advantage of the Audible offer, as I mentioned, and if you want to get us on Twitter, it is at Wagyu Podcast. Right, that is pretty much it. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Mark.
And thank you, DC. What games have we got? Anything exciting to look forward to this week?
Leicester Derby on Friday.
Oh, is it?
Watford at home to Reading on Saturday. So I'm hoping that Sinino can turn his solid start into a really good start by getting 3 points.
Excellent. All right. Well, I think that's pretty much it for the first one back of 2014. We're easing in. We'll speak to you in about 7 days' time.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.